Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System. Text. Shiloncha vritya paritoshta chito dharma mahanta viraja jushana mai arpitatma grihe eva tishta nati prasakta samupaiti shanti. Shilon chavritya paritushta chitto.
Shilon chavritya paritushta chitto.
Dharmam mahantam virajam jushana.
Dharmam mahantam virajam jushana.
Mayarpitatma griha eva tishta.
Mayarpitatma griha eva tishta.
Nati prasakta samupaiti shanti.
Nati prasakta samupaiti shanti.
Shilon chavritya paritushta chito.
Shilon chavritya paritushta chito.
Dharma mahantam virajam jushana.
Dharma mahantam virajam jushana.
Mayarpitatma griha eva tishta.
Mayarpitatma griha eva tishta.
Nati prasakta samupaiti shanti.
Nati prasakta samupaiti shanti.
Shilon chavritya paritushta chitto.
Shilon chavritya paritushta chitto.
Dharma mahantam virajam jushana.
Dharma mahantam virajam jushana.
Mayarpitatma griha eva tishta.
Mayarpitatma griha eva tishta.
Nati prasakta samupaiti shanti.
Nati prasakta samupaiti shanti.
Shiloncha.
Shiloncha.
Of gleaning grains.
Of gleaning grains.
Vritya.
Vritya.
By the occupation.
By the occupation.
Paritushta.
Paritushta.
Fully satisfied.
Fully satisfied.
Chitta.
Chitta.
Whose consciousness?
Whose consciousness?
Dharma.
Dharma.
Religious principle.
Religious principle.
Mahanta.
Mahanta.
Magnanimous and hospitable.
Magnanimous and hospitable.
Viraja.
Viraja.
Purified of material desire.
Purified of material desire.
Jushana.
Jushana.
Cultivating.
Cultivating.
Mai.
Mai.
In me.
In me.
Arpita.
Arpita.
Dedicated.
Dedicated.
Atma.
Atma.
Whose mind
Grihe,
at home,
Eva, even,
Tishtan,
remaining,
not,
Ati,
very.
Prasakta,
attached.
Samupaiti,
achieves.
Shanti,
liberation.
Translation.
A Brahman householder should remain satisfied in mind by gleaning rejected grains from agricultural fields and marketplaces. Keeping himself free of personal desire, he should practice magnanimous religious principles with consciousness absorbed in me. In this way, a Brahman may stay at home as a householder without very much attachment and thus achieve liberation. Purport. Mahantam refers to magnanimous religious principles, such as very hospitably receiving guests, even those who are uninvited and unexpected. Householders must always be magnanimous and charitable to others, being alert to curb unnecessary affection and attachment in family life. In the past, very renounced Brahmin householders would collect grains that had fallen on the ground in the marketplace, or those that had been left behind in the fields after harvesting. The most important item here is mayarpitatma, or fixing the mind in Krishna. Despite his material situation, anyone who constantly meditates upon the Lord can become a liberated soul. As stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12187, Iha yasya haryadasye karmana manasagira nikilasvap yavastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. Which means, a person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person, even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. Shiloncha vritya paritushta chito dharmam mahantam virajam jishana mayarpitatma griha eva tishtan nati prasakta Samupaiti Shantim. A Brahman householder should remain satisfied in mind by gleaning rejected grains from agricultural fields and marketplaces. Keeping himself free of personal desire, he should practice magnanimous religious principles with consciousness absorbed in me. In this way, a Brahman may stay at home as a householder without very much attachment, and thus achieve liberation. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shmati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nerevishesha Shanyaladi Pastityadesh Tarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gata Shivasana Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. In the human form of life, the goal is to go back home, back to Godhead, and not just to live comfortably, enjoyably in material existence. To live like that in material life is, for the devotee, it is anathema. Anathema? Understand? It's just like something which makes the person sick. Yeah, for a devotee. It's just something just opposed to what you see as your interest. Yeah. So, for the devotee, it's like that. Material existence, eat, drink, and be merry, and accumulate material things, and develop your material facilities, your comforts, and so on like this. For a devotee, this is all like poison, actually. It's all like poison. It's just like, well, sometimes we give the example, it illustrates the point in a reasonable way, is that you may have one roti and some rich person who has, you know, so many material things, so much money and possessions and whatnot. He may have 1,000 rotis. You may have one or two. How many rotis can you manage comfortably in a meal?
Four.
Wow. Sure. Okay. All right. My four roti days have finished some time ago. So, all right. So, Krishna Kripa Prabhu may comfortably be able to eat four. And it's not overdoing it for him. He can digest it, and so that's good. That's fine. Someone else, that rich person, may have 4,000, and people may look, and that rich man may think that, look at this, he has four rotis. Huh, I have 4,000. Just see how much better is my situation. So, but the devotee can eat four rotis comfortably and happily, and then with that renewed energy carry on with more devotional service to Krishna, and in this way be very happy. But that rich person, if he tries to eat 4,000 rotis, he tries to eat 1,000, if he tries to eat 100 even, he'll become sick if he tries. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a bodyguard. He had a bodyguard. And this man was a big Sikh. Big man from North India, from Kshatriya background. He was a big, strong man. And he would eat. At lunch, he would eat, and they had someone specially to make for him, between 25 and 30 rotis. Makes your 40s seem like just nothing. But he would eat 25 to 30 rotis, and I read, devotees were aware of this. They were aware. And everyone was quite astonished. 25 to 30 rotis. Whew. Hare Krishna. But you try to eat 100, 400, 1,000, 4,000. You try to eat 4,000. If you just keep going and going and going, you will become sick. You may die. I mean, if you really try to eat 4,000, you will actually die. So material life is like that. People have this idea, let us increase and increase and increase, more money, more possessions, bigger facilities, and so on. But what happens is that in reality, particularly, well, materially also, but particularly from the spiritual point of view, they become sick. Actually, they are sick. And they become more sick. Material extravagance is just a manifestation of internal sickness, spiritual sickness. Yeah. An interesting sociological point. I've been to America a few times, and I've noticed how in America there are so many fat people. It's amazing. I think I read recently that it's something like 35% or more, may even be 50 of the population are obese. Means beyond just being overweight and more than what you should be. It means it's dangerous, actually. It's dangerous, particularly as you get older. It's just dangerous. So like this material extravagance and this material mood of acquisition and enjoyment, it's a diseased condition. And therefore the devotees, and here the Brahmins, the Brahmin devotees, they, in one sense, they're the best of the devotees. The Brahmins are the natural spiritual masters of the other Varanas. So the Brahmins particularly would be very conscious of this fact and would deliberately keep themselves in a condition materially of no extravagance, and even the opposite, actually. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that his policy, part of his policy regarding temple management, was always keep the temple in a little debt, so the devotees will never become lazy and just relax and think about getting this and that and this type of, it's material consciousness, being comfortable in so many ways. But they would always be a little concerned that, you know, oh, we have to make an effort and we must be careful and not waste, things like this. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Prabhupada explained that this was like an official policy, practically, that he had. Not, of course, on the other hand, that, you know, let us really avoid extravagance by bankrupting ourselves completely and just, you know, not that extreme. But a little debt. So there's always that feeling, that idea that we must make an effort. And we cannot waste, because if you waste a grain of rice, this is another thing Srila Prabhupada said, if you waste one grain, every grain you waste, even one grain, in the future you'll be short that. Meaning you'll feel it. You might say, one grain, what's one grain? But one grain a day, one grain a meal, if you eat two times, three times a day, something like that, two or three times a day, one grain a meal, after some time, that's a whole meal. After some time, whatever it may be, that's a whole meal. And so, therefore, you'll end up, if you waste one grain, if you waste regularly, then sooner or later you'll end up without, and you'll feel it. You'll really feel it. That time, just like who was it was cursed? Karna. Or who was cursed? That when the critical time comes, you'll forget the mantra. Karna, I think so. The mantra to do what? Oh, anyway, invoke some weapon. Was it Karna? I think it was Karna. I thought it was Karna. So anyway, yeah. At the critical time, you'll forget the mantra. And in the battle, the critical time came. He forgot the mantra. And he was finished. So we might think one grain. You know, as I wander up and down between the bottom there and the temple room, occasionally I see on the side under the tree a paper plate with, you know, half a meal on it or some fairly reasonably substantial amount of prasad on it, just under the trees there. And I think about that. Yeah. So someday, if you waste one grain a meal, and what to speak of if you regularly waste more, then in the future you'll be lacking. And just like Karna, he really felt it. He was killed, actually. So Krishna, in order to correct us, Krishna may give us that special mercy, the special mercy, tough love, shake us up a bit, that we'll find in some situation where we really feel that we're in need of something, we just can't get it. So the Brahmins, as described here, the Brahmin Vaishnavs, what was the term? Mayarpitatma. Because they had their minds fixed on Krishna. Because they had their minds fixed, Krishna says, on me, my arpita atma. Their minds are fixed on me. Then they're very conscious of what they do and of what they have and of how they use things. They're very, very conscious like that. And what to speak of being careful about becoming extravagant, but they'll even accept somewhat, little bit extreme living conditions, as mentioned here. Well, the other day, was it Friday, I think, we mentioned about Raghunath Das Goswami and how he was living and without making any effort. Money was coming, and without him asking anyone, can you help me? People were coming to help. His father sent some servants, his father sent a cook and money, and he didn't have to ask for anything. Everything was just coming. And he was engaging those things in Krishna's service. And he was, for example, twice a month, he would invite Lord Chaitanya for lunch. And other days he would invite other devotees and serve them very nice prasadam. But after a while he thought, wait a minute, this is not really suitable. It's not really so good. Someone might say, well, it's just coming. Krishna's arrangement. You must engage, you know, yukta vairagya. Engage things that come your way in Krishna's service. Of course, that's, you know, that point is there. But for himself, he felt it's not appropriate. I'm a sannyasi, and I should really just really accept a really renounced way of life. So he adopted a way of life which was even more austere than Lord Chaitanya's, actually. Lord Chaitanya would come and have lunch with him. Lord Chaitanya didn't complain. And Lord Chaitanya would visit so many devotees and have lunch. And he didn't complain, but Raghunath Das felt, no, this is not suitable. And then step by step, he accepted more and more and more renounced standards when it came to eating, particularly eating, at least that's what's described there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when Lord Chaitanya heard that he had done that, Lord Chaitanya, even though he had been accepting that nice prasadam cooked by a professional cook, expert, in other words, expert cook, but when he heard that Raghunath Das has now adopted a much more renounced standard in terms of eating, Lord Chaitanya was happy. So we talked about that on Friday. Lord Chaitanya came and stole some of that dirty, rejected rice and said to him, "That, you rascal, you were hiding away and feasting without telling anyone. You got such nice prasadam, you didn't want to share it." So, and then Lord Chaitanya adds up. As we know, it sometimes happens. Well, in the past it has definitely happened. Some devotees, when the Sunday feast comes or some feast comes, they make sure they're in the front of the line for prasadam, and they get plenty of nice prasadam. And then off they go to their room or some quiet place where no one will come and possibly ask for something or steal anything or disturb them from their meditation and their, well, you know, their experience of relishing prasadam. So Lord Chaitanya, he did like that, even when, and he was very pleased. And he told Raghunath Das that you don't eat opulent prasadam, don't wear fine clothes, just chant, and just talk about Krishna. So a similar sort of idea is here, actually. It's a similar type of idea that these Brahmins, and these are Brahmin householders. So for any of you who are householders, anyway, the principle, at least, the principle is an extremely important one. It's one thing for a sannyasi or brahmachari or even a vanaprastha, but for a householder, such a standard of living is, so many people would think this is really extremely extreme. But it's according to what's said here, it was not really that unusual that some Brahmin householders would live like that. Two things are particularly focused on here. One is that lifestyle of considerable austerity, really considerable austerity. Another thing which is mentioned here is the point about magnanimity for householders. Being magnanimous is very important. And not being greedy or hoarding, that sort of idea. That I will hoard in my locker prasadam from the Sunday feast. And every day I'll have a bit until it becomes apparent that at least on the material level, it has gone past the, you know, sell-by date or respect-by date. And, you know, it is manifesting certain characteristics which show that openly. And then the rest, well, I'll give it to a tree. See how magnanimous I am. I'm not even thinking about me. I want to help the other living entities. But really, obviously, I want to help me. And when things get to that point and I can't help myself any longer, then I just dump it with the excuse of Krishna consciousness, helping some other living entity. So, but householders in Vedic society, this principle of magnanimity, generosity, is so extremely fundamental, foundational, so extremely important. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of his own father, who Srila Prabhupada said every single day, 7 days a week, 365 days in a year, not just on Sundays or certain days, but Srila Prabhupada said, there was never a day that he could recall in which his father would not invite some total strangers off the street for prasadam. And every single day, without exception, without fail, Srila Prabhupada's father, Gaur Mohan Day, would just walk out on the street and shout, is there anyone hungry? If you're hungry, please come here. And Srila Prabhupada said, every single day while he was at home, until he left home later, every day, there were at least two or three people. And some of them were just really like, not the sort of people you would normally invite, like to a gathering in your house. Some of them were just people off the street. And Prabhupada even made the point that there was, sometimes there were people who, they would wear white, and they would do some odd jobs around and make a little money. But then later in the day, when people, there are more people perhaps going home from work or something like that, those people would put on saffron as if they were mendicants or renunciates and go out in the street and beg. But Srila Prabhupada's father, even knowing that some of these people were like that, would still invite them for lunch or allow them to come. So it's really a very important principle. Something we've referred to before, you may have read yourselves, in the story of the initial appearance of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Kasyapa comes home and finds Diti in a very emotional, extremely emotional condition. She's just completely lost her cool altogether, just lying on the ground, just weeping and moaning and groaning, and in really in a state. And Kasyapa, as the husband, of course, he immediately inquired what's happened, and really involved himself in the situation. So he asked her, what's happened? And she was in such a condition, she was not able to respond. So he started suggesting, did this happen? Did that happen? First thing he suggested was, did an uninvited guest come and you were somehow not able to receive the person properly? You can look there in the Bhagavatam. This is actually the first thing he suggests. And then after that he suggests, did someone insult you or steal from you or abuse you in some way? You know, by current day standards, if there's someone who, you know, who's close to you and you find them in some extreme condition like that, I mean, at least the people in general, for sure, some family member or very close friend, and they find the person is just in a bewildered condition of that sort, and not even able to say what happened, and then they start suggesting, what did this happen or that, you would normally expect them to start by saying, you know, did someone beat you or scream at you or attack you or something like that. And, you know, were you unable to receive an uninvited guest? You wouldn't, by modern day standards, you wouldn't even think of suggesting that. But that was the first thing that Kasyapa suggested, because it's a very big thing for householders. It's a very, very big thing. Because household life, after all, means it is the one ashram. It is the one ashram where some limited sense gratification is allowed. Srila Prabhupada would say it is a type of license for sense gratification. Just a license, like driving license. It's just a license. You can't drive any old way down West Street on the wrong side of the road at 200 kilometers an hour midday on Saturday, and the police stop you and they say, wait a minute, I have a license, it's okay. Or if you have a gun, you have a license for a gun, you shoot some people and then you show your license, oh, it's all right, I have a license. So having a license is just a license for limited use of a particular facility. So grihastha life means there's a license, but it's a limited license for sense gratification. It's not just now anything goes at all. Not at all. And part of the sadhana, it is part of the sadhana, the program of practice for personal improvement. Part of the sadhana for householders is to be magnanimous. It is actually part of the sadhana. It's not just that, well, you know, let's be kind to these poor brahmacharis, help them out occasionally. But actually it's part of the sadhana for householders to help them avoid or cure them of the tendency to become materialistic, as we said, accumulate and move in the direction of extravagance. So it's extremely important to help such a person become free from, not develop or become free from, the tendency to become materially attached, and in this way, on the basis of that license, just get entangled in materialism. Yes, so like Lord Chaitanya's appearance day around that time, we mentioned about Kolavecha Sridhar. Kolavecha Sridhar. He was a householder. He was a householder, Vaishya, perhaps. He was involved in business activity, banana business. But every single day, whatever he made, even if he made just a little, whatever he made, he would give half. He would give half for the worship of Mother Ganges. Even if it was next to nothing, even if he sold nothing and made nothing, he would give half of nothing for the worship of Mother Ganges. But it was his absolute principle. And we mentioned on one of the days around Gaur Purnima how Lord Chaitanya would come and joke with him. Of course, Lord Chaitanya knows everything. But he would come and joke that I've heard you make so much money that you can afford to give half for the worship of Mother Ganges. You must be so rich. He wasn't rich. And Lord Chaitanya knew it. It was just a joke. Yes. But that was his principle. Extreme. He's a householder. But he really lived a very extreme, a very austere lifestyle. Sudama the Brahmin is also a very well-known example. It was not just him. It was not just his wife. But there were children there also. But he was living a very austere life, to the point where his wife, who's also a Brahmin and who understands these things, but she just felt this is too much. The children, I can tolerate it, but our children, they don't understand, and it's difficult for them. So magnanimity, this austerity and magnanimity, these very important principles for the Brahmins and for the devotees too. As Prabhupada would say, simple living and high thinking. That's Srila Prabhupada's way of putting it in a nutshell. Simple living and high thinking. We've mentioned also one story we were told by one devotee. He was with Srila Prabhupada in some city, and he got married, and Srila Prabhupada was there and was aware that he got married. The next morning he went on the morning walk with Srila Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, "Now I'm a householder, what are my duties?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Be generous, don't be miserly," and looked away and just kept walking. And that devotee was surprised. He was expecting something more sort of, obviously Krishna conscious. And then Prabhupada moved on to some other town, And he, the same devotee, went there to wherever Prabhupada was about 2 weeks later. And he thought, let me take this opportunity to ask Prabhupada again. And maybe he'll have forgotten what he said and, you know, give some more in-depth instruction how to be a Krishna conscious householder. So he asked Prabhupada again. Prabhupada said, be generous. Don't be miserly. Such an important thing for householders to break that, the knot in the heart, that knot which can become knotted around so many things in the name of household life in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any comment or question? What did you
ask? Can we accept the child from devotees, congregation devotees? You are charging 16 pounds, you're charging less than 16 pounds, and on a regular basis.
Can you? Well, it's not impossible, depends on the circumstances. If they're following regulative principles, and if they're chanting regularly, and they really are devotees, then it may be possible under certain circumstances. But as a general rule, one shouldn't do that. Food cooked by them. You could accept some fruit if, you know, under certain circumstances. But food which is cooked by them, in most cases, I mean, at least if you have the option, it would be best to avoid it. But food which is cooked by people who are not following regulative principles, then actually we should avoid that. Unless, you know, you're desperate. There's a famous story of Srila Prabhupada traveling by train. And they stopped at some station. Somehow they hadn't made proper prasadam arrangements for Srila Prabhupada. They stopped at a station. There was some man on the platform selling samosas, which he was cooking on the spot. Prabhupada told the devotees, go buy some samosas. So they did, and Prabhupada ate them, or some of them. And the devotees said, but Prabhupada, you know, how do we know if he's a devotee, or, you know, like that? And Prabhupada said, well, you know, when you're really hungry, then you may take something. But otherwise, as a general rule, we wouldn't do that.
Did it on the train too, Maharaj?
You did
it on the Prabhupada. You took some rice.
Is it? I don't know about rice. I've heard about samosas.
Something he took.
It's in one of the biographies. And your comment, please.
It's amazing in America how people just like over. I remember when they go to these takeout places and they have a drink, they've always got the big thing called the big gulp. It's like about that stuff. Now I believe they got a thing called the super big gulp. And I also heard one man was so obese that he had to go to hospital. They had to take a portion of the roof off and living with the industrial grade. I know it sounds really, but it actually happens.
Yeah.
I've even heard a place where they had to lock down walls too. One man in Italy was so overbearing. Terrible. But I was thinking to myself this when we consume all that we need, or we actually have more, it's like somebody is bloated. You know, when you overeat,
yeah.
That's why they never satisfy these materialistic things without so much. Like my brother is like that, he's got so much, but he's as miserable as sick. No, I think it's like somebody just overeating. It's just getting sick, bringing it all up.
Well, our devotees in Hungary, who scientists, devotees, PhDs, they did research into the capacity of the planet to produce agricultural produce. And according to their calculation, if the whole world consumed on the same scale as the United States of America, the people there consume, this planet will not be able to produce enough at all. And their calculation is we will need 6 planets. We'll need 6 planets if everybody consumes on the same scale as Americans do. Yeah.
They didn't know how to pull out all the stops.
About what?
To dress opulently.
Oh, okay.
Mention about householders before when the Brahmachari in the ashram, who were trained to dress simple, but now it's a congregation with movement.
Well, look, if they're actually brahmacharinis, it's one thing if they're unmarried girls living at home or, and so on like that and working. But if they're actually brahmacharinis, you just very nicely tell them what else you're going to do. Well, look, we don't want pseudo-brahmacharinis. But some will, if they get nice association and inspiration. Yeah. You know, the intelligent ones and serious ones will understand, yes, actually it's better. And those who don't want to live like that, well, you know, it may well be better that they're not in the ashram. They can be devotees. But if they're really inclined in those sorts of directions, let them stay outside and, you know, and be devotees. But, you know, yeah, the ashrams, Brahmachari Brahmacharini, have been neglected to some degree over the last, well, I don't know how many years, but some years. But there's a greater consciousness developing currently of the value, the importance and the need for having good brahmachari and brahmacharini ashrams. You know, a type of a proof, I mean this is not absolute, but a type of, you know, evidence to suggest the fact that so many brahmacharis and brahmacharinis from those days, like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when it was much, those ashrams were stronger. The fact that not many of them are still brahmacharis and brahmacharinis is a type of, you know, evidence, or, you know, it says something that maybe those brahmachari and brahmacharini ashrams in those days, to some degree at least, were not really run very nice, as nicely as they could have been, to some degree at least. Not that it's just the fault of the people running the ashrams completely, it's not. But, you know, in some cases, some sort of marginal borderline people who could have remained, but you know, it was not easy for them. And in the end, they didn't remain. If the ashram had really been much more together and living in that ashram situation had been much nicer, then, you know, some of those kind of marginal people would have come onto the, you could say, better side of the margin and been able to stay in Brahmachari or Brahmacharini ashram either longer or permanently and been happy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.